Let me call the February 28, 2024 meeting of the Coastal Regional MPO. Will now come to order. The Coastal Regional MPO is holding an in-person meeting with a virtual option for non-voting members and members of the public. For staff, board members, and members of the public who are participating, today's agenda is broken down into the following items. Approval of the agenda. Committee reports, actions items to be presented by staff, other business, status report on current projects, activities, information report, other public comments, notes by the chairman, adjournment. For each agenda item, action item, the staff will make a presentation. The board may then ask questions of the staff for clarification. During the public comment section, the floor will be open to the public to discuss matters on the agenda. For members of the public that are online, if you wish to comment on an item that the board is considering, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. For person attending the meeting in person who desire to speak, staff will provide you with a speaker's card. At the appropriate time, I will recognize you and staff will direct you to the microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by me, you will be notified that your time has expired, and I will recognize the next speaker. The meeting will now come to order. First on our agenda is the approval of our minutes from the December 13, 2023 minutes. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
I move to approve the minutes. Palumbo. Okay.
Second. DeMassimo.
It's been properly motioned and second that the minutes be approved. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your support for it by starting to my right. Identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Palumbo.
Hi, Melder.
Hi, DeMassimo.
Hi, hello, hi.
Hi, Jarrett.
I think it's the other side.
Aye, Ted Hicks, GDOT.
Aye, Tom Hutcherson, Pooler.
Mr. Chairman, we didn't do the approval of agenda and committee reports. Do you want to do those two?
Okay, well, I'm going by what y'all gave me as the agenda in front of me. So that's what's on here. So we can straighten it out. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Go ahead. But we got to finish with the mayor from Poole.
I don't know if we could both vote or not.
Hi. Yeah. Karen Williams.
All right. The minutes are approved. All right. Let us approve the agenda.
Mr. Chairman, I move for the approval of the agenda. Palumbo.
DeMassimo, second.
Probably motion and second that the agenda be approved. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your votes by starting to my left with the mayor.
Karen Williams, aye.
Tom Hutcherson, aye.
Hicks, aye. Jared, aye.
Palumbo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, aye.
Aiello, yes.
All right. Chairman, aye. Everything is approved, the minutes are approved, and the agenda is approved. We'll go to committee reports.
Good morning. TCC, Technical Coordinating Committee, was held on February 15th, and we endorsed all of the action items that were presented.
Okay. Okay.
Good morning. The ACAP meeting was held this Monday and all action items were endorsed.
CAC?
CAC was held on February 15th and all action items were endorsed.
Executive Director?
Good afternoon or good morning, everybody. Welcome. Basically want to make sure that you all know that we will be moving forward today with hopefully a final vote on the boundary. And I just wanted to let you know that we will also be sending out notices with regards to the change in dues. So that's my report, because I want to make sure that you are looking in your emails to get that that change.
All right. Any questions from the board member about any of those things? All right. None. All right. Let us move on to the action item. Approval of the we have that already. Approval of the MTP.
Good morning, board members. We received a request from GDOT to process an amendment to the current 2045 Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And the request is to add the right-of-way phase of a feasibility study into 2028, which is our cost band 2 of the 2045 MTP. For the MPO's consideration, we are concerned with the fiscal constraint. So if inclusion of this project is impacting other projects, meaning kicking other projects out, we have to conduct a two-step amendment. And if it doesn't impact, and we would conduct a one-step amendment. So we did analysis, and this is the GDOT request. Currently, GDOT is doing a short-term fix for the Talmadge Bridge, tighten the cables and raise the bridge up. But they consider that a short-term solution. So the longer-term solution, GDOT is doing explore what other options might be, replacement of the Talmadge Bridge or a tunnel underneath or something like that. So they conducted a feasibility study. So now, in order for the feasibility study to be reviewed, accepted by FHWA for review, the requirement, the prerequisite, is that we have to include this right-of-way phase, which is about $500,000, into the cost of band 2. And GDOT indicated that they have the additional funds because it's not much money. So we just don't want the feasibility study recommendations, alternative development, just sitting on the shelf. So we do want the FHWA to review the study alternatives. So we check the, for our concern, the MPO's concern is fiscal constraint. Since GDOT has enough money to cover this, and the money is like additional revenues beyond our original revenue projections, and we're okay to process the one-step amendment. So we did advertise for a 15-day public comment period, and so far I haven't received any written comments on this. So if you have any questions on this, actually Ted is over here, and he can help you to answer that.
All right. Any questions from anyone?
Mr. Chairman.
Identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, this is Alderman Palumbo. Thank you, Director Wang, for the presentation. Just for clarity for the public's sake, I know there are many questions outstanding from the public as to the future of the bridge and which direction we're going to head, whether it be a replacement feasibility study for evaluating a tunnel, raising the bridge. Where is the best opportunity for the information to become public, or to put it into one place? Could it be this governing body? And then who will be the decision makers to decide ultimately what the solution will be as we move forward?
You want to respond to that?
Yeah, I'll ask Ted to help answer the questions.
Yeah, GDOT will present the findings of the scoping phase and the feasibility studies to the public. We'll have opportunities for public comment to go over the options, short and long-term solutions, to make sure that the clearance of the bridge is adequate for the port needs in the foreseeable future.
And Alderman Plummer, we also partner with them so that we make sure that we have those meetings and that information on our website, so the public will have the opportunity to also get that information from our website.
Good morning.
All right, is that someone from GDOT speaking?
Yes, my name is Vivian Canizares. I'm assistant office head. You know, the feasibility study is being carried on by the Office of Program Delivery, but we are doing this amendment to precisely, adjust to the federal requirements and allow to have a complete look from, to include the NEPA and all the federal partners and include a very robust, public input and follow the process. So with that, we're guaranteeing the participation from the public and move on with the scoping study. And so there will be plenty of opportunities for anyone to participate. So this is basically just that step to allow to hear from everyone and also to see what kind of alternatives we have and then, you know, look forward to the future. We don't foresee something in the short term as far as like, you know, programming any project or anything, but this is just, you know, a look to what the possibilities will be in the future. Thank you.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And also, Wakota, make sure that everyone sitting here knows now that's a two-step, it's a two-step phase to this whole thing when it comes to that bridge. The first part is the maintenance where they're going to replace the cables and raise.
Yeah, that's the short term.
That's the short term
project. Right, yeah, this is the long term one.
Yeah. The long term plan is to give you the study of whether how they're going, what they're going to replace and how they're going to replace. Yeah. Whether they're going to build a bigger bridge or whether they're going to build a tunnel. Those things are in the study mode. They're not things that are out for the public.
Yeah, it's not a project.
Right. It's not a project yet. It's conceptual ideas that GDOT is going through. When we were in Atlanta, they sat down and showed us exactly what the steps were. All right. So that's why I'm putting that out because I was in that meeting. I don't think anybody else in here was. All right. But it's not just, they're not talking about replacing that bridge in the next 3 years. I think the maintenance and the raising of the cable, and remember now, they said in that meeting, somebody put out that they're going to raise it 20 feet, but that's not exact, okay? They don't know how high they can raise it as they replace those cables. But the cables are in a repair mode. And so the maintenance calls for them to replace those cables, but the bridge is designed so it can be lifted up.
Mm-hmm.
But as to how far, all right? So make sure you tell your constituents, make sure you tell the public what we're looking at now is the maintenance and replacement. This will come along later.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about much later, all right? Now, GDOT is going to drive the ship. They're the captain of the ship when they talk about when they're going to put out what publicly and when they will have, you will have the opportunity for public comments because it's just not Chatham County, even though the bridge sits in Chatham County, it's the Coastal Empire that will be affected by this whole thing. All right. So I just want to put those tidbits in there. Anything else you need to say, Wakota?
We did advertise for a public hearing.
Right.
So we need
so
to have
we
a
have
public
to open
hearing
one
for this. Yes.
All right. So let me have a motion to open the public hearing.
So moved, Mr. Chairman. Palumbo.
Second, Tom Hutcherson.
All right, it's been properly motioned and second that we have a public hearing. Are you ready for the question? Please cast your vote starting to my far right and coming this way.
Yes, Ayala.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes. Palumbo, yes.
Yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Williams, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right, the public open, hearing is now declared open. Is there any member of the public present in the audience that would love to speak on this, on what you see before us right now? All right, seeing none, is there anyone online?
No, sir.
Getting this nod that there is not. May I have a motion to close the public hearing?
So moved, Mr. Chairman. Melder. Palumbo, second.
Proper motion and second that the public hearing be closed. Are you ready for the question? Please signify by casting your votes. Far left.
Williams, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Far right. Far right.
Ayello, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes. Palumbo, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right. Declare the public hearing is closed. All right, let us go on to
Staff will request the board action to approve the 2045 amendment.
All right, we'll approve the amendment. The recommended for endorsement and approval of the amendment to the court is 2045. All right, may I have a motion to approve the recommendation?
Jarrett, so moved.
Second.
Hutcherson, second.
All right, it's properly motion and second that we approve the amendment. Are you ready for the question? Please signify by starting to my far right.
Aiello, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Miller, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Far left.
Williams, left.
Yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
All right, the chairman, yes.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next one.
Yes.
TIP amendment. Okay. I will just give a report on this TIP amendment. We are making the fiscal year 2024 to 2027 transportation improvement program amendment for one project, Tourmaline Park Trail Phase 2B. As you may remember, this project actually construction phase was included in the previous TIP, fiscal year 2021 to 2024 TIP. We have a construction program in fiscal year 2024. At that time, we had about $6.4 million programmed for this project. With the CRESA funds, which were lapsing, and then Y230 funds, and then Y301 funds, and then City of Savannah applied for some earmark funds, and they got earmark funds. So eventually, GDOT was ready to authorize the construction funds, and by that time, they were only able to authorize the funds based on the current cost estimate, the most up-to-date cost estimate. So City of Savannah provided cost estimate, which was about $3.9 million at that time. And then GDOT decision was to, we can authorize no more than $3.9 million, and the sequence of using the funds, the earmark first, and then CRESA funds later, and then Y301 funds. So basically, this project actually lost some of the, like, Y230 funds because of the cost estimate update. But, and you also remember that the City of Savannah put the project out for a bid. For the first round, we got zero bids. And the second round, we got three bids. And the lowest bid is about, $7.8 million. That's included 5% contingency. So the total cost is about $8 million, and so we are $4 million short. So City of Savannah approached the CORMPO asking, do you have some additional federal money that can be applied to this project in January? So we coordinated with GDOT, and the GDOT was asking us, if you do have the money, you need to program a new construction phase. Basically, in order to authorize additional federal dollars, you need to include the new construction phase into fiscal year 2024. And we checked the balance, and we found out in 2024, we have about $16,000 of carbon reduction program funds and $231,000 from the Y230 funds. So these are all the federal dollars we can come up with. So City of Savannah still has to come up with additional local money and additional local funds. So my understanding is that we will help the City of Savannah at least to get those $250,000 federal dollars, and then they can just construct the project with the local funds. But at the same time, we are also applying for SS4A grant funds. We do get those funds, and City of Savannah's like tied to town part will be replenished because the federal dollars would be like a reimbursement program. So if we do get the SS4A grant, and we will process another TIP administrative modification to replace the funds. But if you don't get that, and City of Savannah, we just have to use the local money. So far they have to come based on this. Right now, we are processing this amendment. So in this scenario, they have to come up with about $4 million local funds. And City Council has awarded the contract. So probably construction will start soon. And we hope that we'll get additional funds. But if not, you just have to come up with the local funds.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Let me do this if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Let me ask the manager if he wants to comment first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Support everything that the director has said. The City of Savannah is prepared to cover the cost of this Phase 2B. We are very appreciative if the MPO board would approve these additional dollars. This is a transformational multimodal project that we're undertaking in the city of Savannah and really appreciated the support of the MPO. But the city of Savannah has budgeted and will cover any additional costs that we're not able to pull down from the federal government or from this process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to say how much we appreciate the Corps MPO for their diligent work in finding multiple streams for us to accomplish this goal. It's very difficult in a competitive environment that we have to put out multi-million dollar projects that receive no bidders. But it's a good problem to have in our region, you know, that our economy is growing and that there are multiple projects out there. We're elated to see that council has awarded this project. We're ready to commit to it and very much appreciate that some money is always better than no money. Carbon reduction program, it's a $16,000 grant. Every little bit helps. The Y230 funds to award over $200,000, every little bit helps. So very much appreciate your diligent work in continuing to find funding sources to assist in these efforts. Thank you.
Yeah, and then the lessons learned is that we need to get up to date cost estimate. Because if we kept those $6.4 million, we wouldn't have this problem, right?
So. But point well taken. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Kurt, I agree with that real quick. I agree with your cost estimate comment, but we're seeing cost estimates 30-40% higher, like right off the bat. So I foresee this in the future. We're going to have shortfalls. So when you speak to your designers, your engineers that are putting these projects together, right now, tell them to put 30-40% on top of that.
Yeah. And it's just about looking at some projects that the county's doing. The costs change just about every 10 to 15 days. They add something new in there. All right. So let me say this, and I don't give advice. That's the first thing I want to say. All right. But when you're dealing with construction in Chatham County, all right, take the high road, unless you want to fall short on the low road, take the high road, because the construction and the work that's being done in Brian Effingham and Chatham, all right, not so much Bullock because they're far away, but Brian Effingham and Chatham, it's like contractors and folks have their own, they have their choice as to what they want to do. And because they have a choice in projects that they bid on, all right, sometimes you put out stuff and you don't get zip. Nobody wants to touch it, all right? And then they'll come back and say, well, you know, if you all are willing to pay this price or that price. And one of the things, especially if you're doing projects that involve steel, I think steel must change every 3 days or so. I mean, the price of it just goes up, and that's imported steel, that's local steel, that's coming from everywhere. So it's a good problem to have, all right? But we have to come up with a good solution to the problem, because we just can't say raise the taxes. All of us get run out of town. Yeah. All right. Anything else, Marcona?
Mr. Chairman, if I
could. All right, so Mr. Manager.
Just to a little background on this project, point well taken about the estimates and, of course, the truth about everything rising. We also had a very long procurement process, actually two long procurement processes on this, so that extended the time between the first cost estimate that GDOT approved and these finals. So we'll just wanted to give some background on that. It's not that we had a estimate that was half what the real cost was. It was just a complete, it was a long time before we could get the contract in place. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we did advertise for another public hearing for this project.
Yes. Yeah, we're going there. But I just want to make sure we got all comments from board members and yourself first. All right. We have to open up a public hearing. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move to open the hearing. Palumbo.
40 seconds. All right, the proper motion is second that we open up the public hearing. Are you ready for the question? Please cast your vote, starting to my far left.
Williams, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
All right.
Aiello, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
All right, the chairman, yes. The public hearing is now open. Is there any member of the public in the audience who would like to speak on this issue? Any member? Any member? All right, is there anyone online?
No, sir.
All right. The executive director, I see you raising your hand.
Basically, I wanted to let you know that the manager from Effingham County was online.
He's online?
Just in case you didn't know. Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Seeing none, hearing none, there are none. So may I have a motion to close it?
So moved, Chairman DeMassimo.
Palumbo, second.
All right, properly motion and second that we close the public hearing. Are you ready for the question? Please cast your vote starting to my far right.
Yes, Ayala.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melda, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Williams, yes.
Chairman, yes. The public hearing is now closed. Now let me have a motion to approve the recommendation, right?
Yes.
That's where we are now.
So moved, Chairman DeMassimo.
Palumbo, second.
Properly motion and second that the request be granted. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote starting to my far left.
Williams, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
All right.
Ayala, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Chairman, yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
All right, ready?
Okay, let's move on to the next agenda item, the MPA boundary. Melanie has already gave you the pre-warning about this one. Basically, we remember last June, this Cornfield Board adopted the boundary, the new MPO boundary that includes the southern half of Effingham County and then all of Bryan County except Fort Stewart. But we received a letter from Bryan County. They don't want to be a part of us, basically. So this is the letter they sent to us. And then they give the reasons because they passed a resolution in November of last year. And this is the reasons. North Bryan County is not an urbanized or urbanizing area. And the population is pretty small and it's rural. So the major population growth is in South Bryan County, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is what they sent us. So at that time, we were coordinating with GDOT to develop the revenue projections for the 2050 plan for the new boundary. And now suddenly they don't want to be a part of us. So we researched what we need to do. And this is what we found out. So according to the federal laws, we have to... Our boundary has to include the Savannah urban area as defined by the census plus area to be urbanized within the next 20 years, contiguous area. So a lot of areas in Bryan County is included, is already in the Savannah urban area. So basically Bryan County cannot back out and we cannot back out. So we have no choice. We have to include them. So in that case, we actually worked with Bryan County. We developed three scenarios to see which scenario that would make sense for you. So we wouldn't include Northern Bryan County, but we would just focus on South Bryan County to see which part of Bryan County will be included. And this is the scenario one. As you can see, Richmond Hill is already in our boundary and they're already a voting member. And Bryan County, as you can see, the pink color over here, that's unincorporated Bryan County that is located within Savannah urban area. So by law, these areas has to be a part of the MPO boundary, has to be within MPO boundary. And you can also see these tiny fingers or tiny areas that's like right in the middle of the Richmond Hill. So it's like if you take those out, those donut holes. So we have to include these areas, the pink areas in our boundary. And then there are also tiny, tiny areas, the blue lines over here, that is like surrounded by the Savannah urban area and the Richmond Hill. If we don't take those in, we will have a lot of holes in our boundary. So we decided, okay, this is the minimum that we can include in. So this is the boundary we include in. And you can see there's still a big hole over here. So part of the area is cut off and part of the roadway is cut off as well. But this is the scenario one we presented to them. And then the scenario two, we decided to take in this big hole over here as well. So the boundary will be smoother. And then the third scenario we proposed is it doesn't make any sense to cut off the roadways in half. So let's just include all of South Bryan County, including Richmond Hill. And then we coordinated with Bryan County, and then they gave us the response, and they prefer scenario one. So they decided that they can only be a part of us for the part they have to. So basically this scenario one is what we're going to adopt today. So I'm going to show you the population based on this.
Coda, could I ask a quick question on that? Is the the various scenarios that were developed and then the coordination with Bryan County, how did both as the sort of custodians of this regulation, how did both GDOT planning and the Federal Highway Administration ultimately respond to these alternatives?
Yeah, we coordinated with GDOT. Actually, Bryan County sent the letter to GDOT and Federal Highway first before they sent to us. So GDOT, suddenly one day GDOT contacted us indicating that, okay, we have some problem developing the revenues for you because your boundary, have some problem. And then we didn't know anything about it. We said, okay, we adopted the boundary last June. And they said, no, Bryan County sent us a letter. They don't want to be part of you.
So I understand that's how we found out. Conclusion, where you are today with the alternatives, will Federal Highway, to be really clear, will Federal Highway and GDOT accept any of these three alternatives as eligible, if you will, or appropriate under the federal regulations?
I think Federal Highway and the GDOT take on it is you cannot force Bryan County to join you. So whatever coordination, what kind of agreements you reach with them,
from the conversations, and it was, like I said, a surprise to everybody because they did this in November and I didn't get a letter until January 22nd of this year. But they, based on my conversations, they would be okay with option one, which is what Bryan County chose. They get to decide what part of the MPO that they want to be a part of. So I think that we're okay by choosing option one. We just need to make sure that we vote today on the amended boundary so we can get those revenue.
The only reason I ask is because, I mean, you all know, and I think it's important because it's a public discussion here, is that this impacts our eligibility for federal aid. And so I just wanted to be sure that we were so stating that this would be acceptable to them and therefore the federal aid that flows to us for all kinds of other projects, both in that area and in just the rest of Chatham County, would not be impacted. So that's good to hear.
I think that they would be okay, especially based on the population that's located in those areas. It's over 11,000 folks. So we still are in good standing with regards to being able to participate. We're still a TMA. So that still continues to help as we are applying for different grants and opportunities for you all.
Yeah, it just whatever federal dollar that we have, we cannot use in Bryan County outside our boundary. So this is the population that I just want to let you know. So even if Bryan County, we include limited space in Bryan County, but see how many people live within that area. It's like 13,000.
Quick question. I don't know if this is a good question or not, but short-sightedness of this, we're currently accepting they want to not allow us to expand our boundary. As we know, this area is expanding rapidly. 2020, we have another census. When 2020 comes around, are they going to come back and say, even though by law we can accept them as a boundary, as you said, that they don't want to be involved, and then we'll fight the same battle 6 years from now?
I think as long as they're in, I mean, one of the things that has kind of put them in the situation where they really don't have much of a choice is they're in that urbanized area of Savannah, the way that it's set up. So if that area expands, then whatever is covered in that area will be captured with the new boundary. I am hoping that with all of the development that's taking place now, that when the next census comes up, which will be, I think, 2040 or 20, 2030, I'm sorry, which will be 2030, that there will be enough understanding about the benefits of having those additional areas in the MPO boundaries that we will get some support. I think part of it is that you still have some uneasiness, although we have spent a lot of time going over MPOs and the benefits of the area in that northern area of the county. But I do think that that we'll be in a little bit better position. And again, this was something that they changed their mind about later after they decided to participate.
Yeah, I think it's also a learning curve because we encountered this problem with Effingham County for last reapportionment. So they were only willing to join us with a tiny finger over there. And then they found out when we developed the Old River Road and they have to come up with their own money. And then the US 80 corridor study we did last year, which Portal took the lead. And then Effingham County just couldn't join because they are not in our boundary. So we cannot spend our money. So now Effingham County, because they have learned through the process, they saw the benefits of joining the MPO process, but Bryan County still have the learning curve. So I would say, but if they join us and they go through our process and they realize the benefits, I think they will be more willing to join us. But right now they don't see it that way.
All right. Sorry for taking the stage.
No.
Just more questions. So we're not setting precedent. You're saying precedent was already set. That, and I'm not a lawyer. I'm an engineer. So I'll throw that out there. But I'm just worried in the future what's going to happen if we just push back. And I mean, we know that area is going to really become an urban area with the Bryan County site and everything. It's all moving that way.
Yeah, so
I'm worried about setting precedent now, and then when they come back, we don't want to join.
I do think that the Effingham County example that Wakota mentioned really is a good example because previously they only wanted to do the minimum that was in that urbanized area. And when they realized that there were some projects that they really wanted to participate in that they couldn't participate, they were kind of one of the first ones on board to expand their boundary. So, you know, the federal government has a process with regards that we have to follow. We're following that, and we will continue to follow that. So it's not really even about precedent setting. It's about being consistent with the policies. That's why in that southern area, they have to kind of come in into that boundary based on population in the urbanized area. So that's the way that that works.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wakota, just a couple of quick questions. One procedural for us and the other for our partners. Mr. Aiello brings up excellent points, and we see which direction it's headed in, the growth patterns that are there. It is unfortunate that they would choose this pathway, but that is their decision. Will they have the ability to opt back in before the next census?
No.
So this is
that's it.
Yeah. On the census.
Yeah, we update the boundaries every 10 years. So we are required by law to update our boundary based on the census urbanized area. Now they call that urban area. So we are required to update our boundary per the census. So they cannot update the boundary in between.
And does this affect their dues membership? Does it impact the rest of the core MPO members as well?
We will use the population that I just showed you. I will recalculate the membership dues based on the new population because they have 13,000 living in unincorporated Bryan County. So I'm going to use that to do the calculation. So after board approval of the boundary today.
So it's going to affect it.
Yes.
You won't be charging them for people that they don't want in. They want to stay out. So you have to recalculate all those numbers now.
Yeah.
Based upon what we did in June and what we're doing today, those numbers have to be recalculated.
Yeah.
So it's going to have some effect on all of us. All right. But the short-sightedness of this and I don't get another county's business. I got enough in Chatham County, all right? But I think that if somebody would have sat down and looked at what happened to Effingham County and what Effingham County did when they opt out, and then they said, oh, we need these roads fixed. We need this fixed. We need that fixed. Can we opt in? And they said, no. But that's other people's dime. I'm a nickel. I'm out of that.
Yeah, and also previously in our current boundary, because there are only below 400 people of unincorporated county. So Richmond Hill actually paid for those 400 as well. But now I don't think Richmond Hill is going to willing to pay for 13,000. So they have to split.
Yes, sir. Go right in.
Going back to the answer about if Bryan County could opt back in. So it's 2024 now. The census was in 2020, released 2021. We're just now for the first time changing the maps of our boundary?
Yeah.
Well, and remember, the census this time around came out late. Normally, we would have already had this done, but we didn't get all of our information until very late.
Yeah, census.
Because of that. So the boundary will change again in 2030, and hopefully we will get the information from the census earlier.
Thank you. And then, but it was my understanding that we had adopted a boundary, correct, earlier this summer?
That is correct, and that was why we had some concern, especially when I talked with the folks at GDOT and with Bryan County. Candidly speaking, I think that even they were a little concerned. Initially, they were pretty excited about being part of the MPO. We had participations. They participated in the workshops that we did.
Understood.
Apparently, there was a change of heart politically.
Yeah.
And that's when the letter was sent to GDOT.
I think my question is, and sorry for my need to be educated on the process. So the process is such that you can adopt a map and member jurisdictions can opt out, but they cannot opt back in. So we can pass a map and then jurisdictions can opt out, but then there's no process for opting back in.
Related to that question, I wanted to pair something with that. I do think, Makota, I think you're correct. You're certainly correct that every 10 years we must update the boundary, but in between, we can choose to do an update, so they could opt back in if we chose to accept it. I believe that's correct, but you all would verify.
I have to ask GDOT and the Federal Highway on that, but normally, because when we adopt the boundary, when we adopt the MOU, updated memorandum of understanding and the bylaws, we forward the whole package to GDOT, and who will then forward everything to governor. The governor signs it every 10 years.
Absolutely understand. Yeah, I think it's exactly the same question the city manager just asked too, is when circumstances come up and circumstances like this, and they've already been, amenable to allowing, Bryan County to have a particular position on this that's a little contrary to the situation. I just think that there is absolutely the opportunity for us to come back and allow them back in with the full support of the MPO and the process being followed and so forth.
I just want to say that the reason that they were able to change, Jay, is that we haven't sent the packet up to be signed yet. Everything needs to be put in place before we send it up to be signed for the governor.
So yeah, governor has
the boundaries that was adopted in June was something that we were going to use to come up with the dues formula. So that's why they were able to kind of go back and forth. With regards to whether they can come back or opt back in, we do have somebody from we've got somebody from GDOT here, and we also have others on the online. But I will say that the way that our bylaws are set up, they are set up to follow the guidelines and procedures for the state. So, is it possible? Maybe. Is it probable? You'd have to get additional information from a census standpoint. So it's not as easy to opt back in. That's why you do the opt-in every 10 years, because you've got fresh data. And all the other information that is needed.
I think it's a really worthwhile question to get clear on before we submit this amendment to the state. Because I think that, Mr. Chairman, in what's happening in our region today, 10 years from now, even if we do get the census early, so maybe 8 years from now, is going to be several years too late to catch up with the infrastructure. So that's a comment. And then my next question is, what if the MPO does not approve this amendment?
Let's go to GDOT.
Yeah, and we also have Joseph Lunk online, so that he can also answer it as well.
See, let me say this. MPO was not a part of the conversation. All right. This was done in November. GDOT alert MPO. All right. MPO didn't alert the chairman until yesterday. Okay. And all these conversations had been going on. So I defer to GDOT, the federal, and Bryan County. Okay. Because one of the things that resonate with me is what Wakota said earlier. They said you cannot force them to come in. Mm-hmm. All right. So GDOT, anything you want to say?
It's my understanding what Wakota and Melanie said is correct. You cannot force them to join, but they do. The part that's in the urbanized area has to join. As to making changes later on, we'll need to research that. As far as I know, every 10 years we update these, but there are no interim updates. I think the issue at hand is delaying the adoption of the boundary would delay some data calculations for the core MTP.
Yes. Okay. GDOT is going to develop the revenue projections for us for the 2050 long-range transportation plan, which needs to be adopted on August the 7th of this year. If we delay adoption of the boundary, we don't have the revenue, we don't have the 2050 MTP plan, $0 will flow to our area. That's the impact.
So
affect all of us.
Yes, sir. So I just want to be clear on again, the vote is, it's essentially what I'm hearing is this is a pro forma vote. If the vote failed, all it would do was harm our own MPO. It wouldn't necessarily change the boundaries of the MPO. So the only beneficial vote for us today is to vote yes and make the amendment.
Yes, it's not only hurting the MPO, it's hurting all of our member jurisdictions. Like City of Savannah, you're not going to receive you're going to receive zero federal dollars. CAT is going to receive $0. So if we don't adopt the 2050 long range transportation plan.
Thank you.
I think as a member of the board, I'd like to request though that the MPO and GDOT do some research, because it does seem it's an unusual situation. This is not your run of the mill thing that comes before you. And to Melanie's point, that with education in Effingham County later, they were able to see benefits that weren't so readily, you know, discernible at that point. So if this action that we're going to take today, pro forma as it may be, is respecting, the process for Bryan County to not choose right now, the notion that they might with education come around and have a more fulsome participation that would be good for the urbanized area in the region, the opportunity for that to happen before the 10 years, I think that would be helpful information for us to have and for them to have as we move forward over the next term of 10-year considerations.
And please note that Bryan County did submit feedback, and they chose, so again, they chose option number one, which included additional area as a boundary that they can live with. So you do have something that they can agree on, and whether it's us continuing to do education with them, whether we look at talking with them again in 2030 or, you know, in the future, that's something that we can still continue to have discussions about. But I just want to be clear, they are the ones that chose option one. We basically set it up for what the minimum is that they would have to participate in because they were in the urbanized area. So that's what you've got. And just to reiterate, we didn't get a letter from them until the end of January. So all of this was happening without total clear conversation, and we were moving as quickly as we can. So that's where we are with regards to the boundaries.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'm in the same boat as you, recently become aware of this, and I imagine most members of the board within the last 24 hours. And I just would like to cross our T's and dot our I's and point out to the board that the large portions that are opting out are some of the most critical pieces of infrastructure that may need the most help. And these numbers may not mean much to some, but it will mean a great deal to us. Highway 80, Highway 280, and I-16 are all opting out. and will be ineligible for assistance.
Well, if I may, GDOT
is
going to do that planning for them.
Correct.
As of now, yeah.
These are situations where we know, yeah, as my grandma would say, Lord help him, he needs all the help he can get. And for our partners, especially as politicians up here, it may be an opportunity for us to reach out, as futile as it may be, to help turn them around and help them reconsider, because we will have to wait another, we may have to wait another decade to be able to provide some much needed assistance. And certainly for jurisdictions and our friends in Pooler, who are right there, feeling this, at Highway 80, 280, I-16, may be able to reach out, build a bridge, do anything that we can to assist them in opting back in.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I'm playing a little bit of catch up, with this. We've sold them, or we've talked about the benefits, and somehow they decided to not participate. I'm just curious, what is the one major obstacle that they, that's preventing them from moving forward?
Well, the first thing they have to do is, for all of us sitting here, all right, every jurisdiction sitting here and every jurisdiction that's represented by the MPO, we need to put this in place so that we can get those federal dollars, all right? I don't want it to hinder your federal dollars or your federal dollars or my federal dollars, all right? And since we don't want that to hinder it, let GDOT, the feds, and Bryan County work out their scenario, all right? What was given to them was options, and they were told you can't opt completely out.
That's cool.
You've got to, because of the 2020 census, you have to opt in. And so they looked at what was the most convenient for them to be able to opt in and to go a little further. So they selected scenario A, one, and scenario A, whichever one you want to call it. All right. I would say to us, I don't want them to stop dollars on Highway 80. I don't want them to stop on 204. I don't want them to stop on Old Mill Road or Johnny Carter or Little Neck Road or Quaco Road, because it will affect three or four of us at the same time, right? So this is a conversation and the answer to the manager's question and Ms. Faye's question and Alderman Palumbo's questions and Ayala's question, everybody else's question, rest in the hands of GDOT, the feds, and Bryan County. All right? It's just like we tried to get us to do some stuff earlier, all right, and folks said no. Now I find that there's a demand that we do it now, because none of us know sitting here today exactly how the expansion of this county, Effingham County, Bryan County, Bullock County, what the end's going to be. All of us got to run and see what it's going to be. All right. So if they have to learn a hard lesson, they're going to learn a hard lesson. Unless they go back to GDOT and GDOT comes up with a way they can opt back in and put that back in there. See, and we can't say that today,
yeah.
But so that it not infringe upon your ability to get money, my ability to get federal monies, state monies, let's adopt what they want us to adopt and move on from this stuff. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chairperson, two things. One, Paul Teague, who is from Bryan County, is online, and I just want to let you know we have
him.
Well, right now, if we ask a question, I'm sure he probably will speak. But I will say that one of the things that we have done as part of education is he is participating with the TCC and learning more about the MPO process. So to me, that's been a benefit. Second, Tim Callahan from Effingham County is online and would like to speak. So if you
all right, let's go to Tim from Effingham County. Come on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for not being there in person. I do have one example of how this does negatively affect things. I know one of the things we're looking at, and I believe it's on the agenda, is the corridor study for 80, a logical terminus of that would go to 280 and 80 intersection for that study. And unfortunately, now that's out of the boundary, so we've got to cut it off at an illogical termination point, which would be the Effingham-Bryan County border. For clarification, that was to bring that up as a point, but for clarification, I would like to find out if are they agreeing to be a paying member, or are they just saying that, fine, you can, you know, if these areas have to be in there, they have to be in there?
Yeah, based on their population, like 13,000 of people from unincorporated Bryan County, they probably gain a voting seat, but they have to pay for the membership dues.
But they've agreed to that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman. All right, let's get the answer from him. Paul?
Mr. Chairman, this is Hafte Kasa, Assistant of State for Strategic Planning in Georgia DOT. If I may say something, I think I completely agree with you, Mr. Chairman. For now, just adopt this boundary as it was accepted by the Bryan County. But I completely understand and I'm on board completely that Bryan County is growing. And it is for the benefit of Bryan County that they join the core MPO. And I completely agree with that. But I don't think the federal regulations will prohibit to revisit this boundary expansion, not necessarily to wait until 2030, the next decennial census. But I will research on that and report back to you. But I didn't see anything that prohibits, you know, 2 years down the road, you know, 3 years down the road, if they want to opt in. I didn't see anything that would prohibit them as long as there is agreement between the parties. But I will research on that, you know, kind of huddle with my federal partners and get back with you on that. But I completely agree with you, Mr. Chairman. It's the benefit of the MPO now to adapt the boundary as it was accepted by Bryan County. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Anybody else now? Anyone else? Can we...
Sorry. This is Joe Longo of Federal Highway, just reiterating what Hathi just said, and answering something from earlier. All these proposals do meet the minimum requirements. Federal Highway really just wants to see a cooperative process after that minimum, which is what's being carried out. And then also we will be researching this, as Hathi said, about opting back in, but something to consider is the impact on the MTP. Which will need to reflect that full boundary. Just putting that out there. And again, we will be researching this. So thank you.
All right. And let me just ask you all now, when you research and come up with an answer, all right, or come up with some findings of any kind, please allow us to know. All right. The problem I had yesterday, and I didn't lose no sleep on it. I want all of y'all to know that. I didn't lose not one niche of sleep, all right? Problem I had yesterday was a letter was written in November to me as chairman of this MPO, all right? But it went other places. I just got it yesterday. First time I saw this thing was yesterday, but I'm at the point now where I got a good night's sleep because I said to myself, let it be between GDOT, the feds, and Bryan County. What I don't want it to do is I don't want it to affect anything in Chatham County. All right? Now I would lose some sleep. So when I found out it would not affect anything in Chatham County, especially, now here's where the especially comes in. Bloomingdale, Pooler, Fort Wentworth and City of Savannah and unincorporated Chatham on the west side. Right. Once I determined that this would not affect that in any kind of way, I went to sleep and got a good night's sleep. All right. So I'm just advising us. I'm going in the advice business now. I don't like to go there, but that's just past us. and let Bryan County and them handle it with GDOT and them. And GDOT and them, if they will agree, all of that, all who talk from GDOT and from Federal Highway and from MPO and whatever, please, whenever y'all get an answer to the questions that have been asked by the members of the MPO, please send it to the chairman and please send it to, so I can get it to all the members. All right. All right. Please send it so that the board can get it and the staff can get it so that we'll know. All right. Yesterday I was turd. All right. And it takes a lot of stuff to get me turd, but yesterday I was turd. How do you send a letter to me, written to me, got my name on it, and I don't get it till the day before that we meet today, and it's written back in November? See, somebody messed that up, but forget all that, because I'm not important anyway. Forget all that. What I don't want it to do is I don't want it to affect anybody in here, all right? And that goes for Effingham County, that goes for Bryan County, that goes for Chatham County, who all are part of this MPO, all right? One of us shouldn't have to suffer for everybody, all right? And one of us shouldn't have to suffer because of one. So GDOT is good with this. The feds are good with this. Let us be good with this and pass this, and then let them work with Bryan County to work that out, all right? Because there might be more going on than you all know. And that you all want to know. But I don't know that, because some people want to know things. All right. You want to speak, Ms. Fay?
Yeah, Chairman, I just wanted to make a motion that we adopt. Did you call it scenario? What did you call number one?
Yeah, scenario one.
Scenario one, that we adopt the scenario one MPA boundary and receive the additional information forthcoming that you mentioned there's, and that our partners have mentioned they will research.
Palumbo, second.
All right, it's properly motion and second that we adopt scenario one for Bryan County. Are you ready for the question? Please cast your vote starting my far left.
Williams, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Aiello, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Colombo, yes.
Cody, yes.
Chairman, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we will send the chairman the resolution to sign, and after that we will send it to GDOT, and they will use this boundary to develop the revenue projections. So, okay. Don't delay our 2050 MTP.
Okay.
Can you also let us know if they'll be participating? The question about that would be a you all question, if they'll be participating financially in the as a member of the within.
Oh
the
yeah, boundary. They have to pay.
They have to.
They have to. The feds don't, they didn't let them out of that. They have to. So that's the answer to that is already there. They have to. Let's continue on.
Okay. The next one is the UPWP adoption. I have already presented to you the preliminary draft for the fiscal year 2025 Unified Planning Work Program, which is the staff budget. And it covered July 1st, 2024 to June 30th, 2025. And it includes funding, staff work, and budget. So we actually got three pots of money, highway planning, which is PL, and a set aside from that, which is Y410. And that is basically for bicycle and pedestrian planning or complete street. And then we also get Section 53-3 from Federal Transit Administration. And then all of these require local match. PL funds require 20%. And for Y410, actually, currently, we have a waiver, so it's a 0%. But Section 5303 and GDOT is paying 10%. So our membership dues cover that, the rest. So we actually got the updates from GDOT in early February about the amount, exact amount, because when we did up the preliminary draft, when I presented that to you in December, that was based on last year's amount. So these are the red highlighted ones are the ones that the updated number from GDOT. So for the highway planning funds, there was an increase about $8,000. And then for Y410, there's a decrease about $300. So you can see these are the updated numbers and we got from February 1st one. And then our major tasks, we will still continue to work on the 2050 MTP and then participation plan, 36 plan update. But for the TIP, I did add research on the interactive tip because currently our vendor decided to give up that service. So we want to research on the new tool so that we can so that we can use the tool to not only distribute information and but also probably help us to do like call for project process, because we want to have the capability of like all the jurisdictions or our member agents submit applications to us online, and then the TCC members can just review and score the projects online. So we want to do a research to find a tool on that. So that is something that is I added in this revised draft. And we will still go through the federal certification review to make sure the federal dollars is because the MPO has to be certified. And also we added something new, that's greenhouse gas emission. GDOT is going to adopt the targets probably in March, and then we have to adopt the targets 180 days after that. So we will do some greenhouse gas emission program incorporated into our planning process. So this is the updated table, updated funding and budget table. So the $8,000 that I mentioned from the highway planning funds, I added all that to the administration because we would do a lot of work for the federal certification review and coordination. So I added that $8,000 over there. As you can see, federal transit funds didn't change. And then the Y410 funds has decreased. So this is the budget. And then the ongoing studies, we received some comments from Federal Highway and GDOT. We incorporated comments. One comment is to, we need to add consultants and schedules. Cause when we developed the preliminary draft, Chatham County was still in the procurement process. So we didn't know who the consultants would be for the 204 study, US 17 corridor study, and Preston Street study. So now we got all three projects already moving. And so we have the consultant's name and then the schedules. So those have been updated. City of Savannah, I think GDOT has taken the lead on I-16X ramp removal. When they acquire the consultant and schedule, we can insert into the UPWP. But so far, I think they're still in the procurement process. So these are the ongoing studies, including the CAD, AOPP-funded study, and ARP-funded study. And for the unfunded studies, because we want to TCC has two rounds of discussion on these unfunded studies, and I think in August we will probably recommend some of these studies to be we would do like grant application. Probably choose based on the staff level. So we might choose two or three projects of three studies over here that we apply for the federal funding, planning funding. Something that I highlighted over here, one of them is like bike pedestrian plan implementation too. I did talk to you about this at last meeting, but at that time I didn't have the information. But now I have the information because the Bike Path Savannah and worked with the Coast Georgia Indicator Coalition provided that information. So they want to develop the bike pedestrian plan implementation too. And then we will also have a bike path planning committee. So they will oversee this. Another one is Mr. Callanan already talked about the US 80 corridor study phase two. So we talked to you about this one at that time. I remember the chairman mentioned that the limit should go from Effingham County, Chatham County county line, go all the way to US 280. But since Bryan County opted out, so we cut that Bryan County portion of it. That's actually the impact is about 1.5 miles. So we revised the limit and then the cost estimate for this study in the UPWP. So now the cost is about $222,000. So these are the studies, unfunded studies. We might choose to apply for PL discretionary funds. So we will come back to you probably in August for a resolution in support of the funding application for some of these. And other updates, the boundary, yes, we have to include the boundary in the UPWP. So now we adopt the boundary today. So I'm going to update that portion for in the UPWP. And financial information, I already talked to you about the PL funds and Y410 funds. And then the FHW and GDOT comments also include the planning emphasis areas. I'll add some correlation language over there. And then they want us to add the non-voting members on the Quorum Appeal Board and the TCC to the roster as well. And also because of the election, like Fuller, they have a new mayor. So our roster has to be updated, and including other agencies and members as well. And also I already talked about greenhouse gas emission performance targets. So we hope to have the UPWP adopted at this meeting by the Quorum Appeal Board. And after that, we will forward the document to GDOT and Federal Highway Administration. And then they will start the approval process, and then GDOT will develop the contract. So I do want to have this draft brought up over here. So as you can see, I highlighted everything that has changed in red. So if you're interested in reading in more details, and so you don't have to read the whole thing, you can see all the changes highlighted in red in this revised document. So the staff is asking for the Quorum Appeal Board adoption of the proposed revised UPWP.
All right, any questions? Any questions from any board member? All right, well, Cota, I have a question. Go back to the screen where you put up that budget.
Okay.
The drafted budget, the presented budget. Yeah, oh.
This one?
It went too fast. Go back.
Oh.
Go back.
This one?
There. Okay. When you all calculated those things, did you calculate based upon what we did in June with that portion of Bryan County, or did you all take it out?
It doesn't.
Here's why I ask that now. Because what we did in June required them to pay certain amount for our dues. What we adopt today is going to adjust that, right?
Yeah.
All right. So is this based upon the June, or is this based upon what we did today?
Yeah, I will ask
when
the
you
tax
came up. See, you said total funds and you're talking about the match and everything. I want to make sure we're on the page.
Yes, I can speak to that.
Okay, go ahead.
Chairman. These are based on the census urbanized area population total, so they will not be affected by the boundaries.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to know. I don't want nobody's money to come short. All right. So now, may I have a motion to adopt?
So moved.
A second.
All right, it's properly motioned and second that we adopt. Are you ready for the question? Is there a question? All right, let's signify by voting, beginning to my left.
Williams, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
To my left, right.
Aiello, yes.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Cody, yes.
Chairman, yes.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The next item, I think GDOT is going to do the presentation.
Okay.
Basically, the travel demand model is an analytical tool for us to develop the 2050 long-range transportation plan. So GDOT sent us the model. Let me just see. And they will give a presentation and give you more details. Hepti, are you there?
Thank you. Yes, I'm there. Thank you, Waikoda.
Okay. Yeah, just tell me when to move forward.
Will do. Will do. All right. Thank you. You can go to the next slide. This is nothing but just a cover slide. So go to the next slide, please. Good morning again, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I thank you for the opportunity to present the core MPO travel demand model, which will be used, as Waikoda said, analysis tool for the federal required MTP update. For more than two decades, GDOT has been assisting 14 MPOs in Georgia to develop their travel demand model as an analysis tool for their respective plan updates. And that's where we are now. What you see here is a slide, just a reminder of the federal requirement to update the MTP in a 5-year cycle with the minimum of 20-year horizon planning horizon. So next slide, please. So as I said, we do this every 5 years, and the last maybe 3.5 years or so, we came to this body to present the model. And after that happened, after we presented the model, obviously a lot of different things have happened. As you see, the green bar is what the MPO was responsible, and then the bluish bar is what GDOT and our consultant has done. Obviously, the census, the Sentinel Census 2020 has happened after we came the last time. We updated and reviewed the traffic analysis zones to align with the census boundary. We also included the 2017 National Household Travel Survey, which GDOT, Office of Planning, purchased for additional $1.8 million of survey to make sure that we have a good trip rate. And because of that, the model has been really performing very well. And then we updated and validated the model to a base year of 2020. This is just to coincide with the federal requirement of 20-year planning horizon. You'll see it in the next slide, but the base year is 2020 and the planning horizon year is 2050. Next slide, please. So once we did all of the input, go back. Yeah, right there. Thank you. So once we did the input, the functional classification roads, the socioeconomic data and everything else, then we do run travel demand model that kind of, spits out a lot of different performance metrics. One of them being the 2020 model volume. This is basically a volume bandwidth where most of the vehicle miles travels, most of the model volume is happening. The usual suspects are kind of, highlighted, Highway 80, State Route 21, 17, and all of those, including I-95 and I-16, you see the majority of the trips are being served by those roadways. Next slide, please. This actually shows the performance metrics, which is the daily level of service, the 2020 daily level of service. The daily level of service is basically the model traffic volume or traffic divided by the daily capacity of each of the roadway segments. Obviously, interstate and the higher functional classification, they carry a lot of traffic because they have more capacity than roads, than small roads. So this basically shows the daily level of service of 2020, and shows what it is. Next slide, please. And then once we did the 2020 travel demand model, well calibrated and validated. By the way, we prepared a lot of detailed slides where I presented for the TCC last week. But due to the time constraint that you have, I got a lot of technical slides. If anybody had interest to look at those performance metrics and then the validation and the calibration statistics to which we are really proud of, I can forward it to anyone who asks that. But basically, this is the socioeconomic data provided by MPO. Again, at this point, I just want to recognize WICODA and her staff to providing the needed socioeconomic data zonal. It's not just the entire county or business zonal, which have 600-700 traffic analysis zones. For all of zones, we have received socioeconomic data. And that you can see, there is a 52% growth rate between 2020 and 2050 for all of these different metrics, which is the total population, household employment, K-12 students, and then the total university enrollment. Next slide, please. So once we did that, we did the same type of, traffic volume or so basically what we do is we have the calibrated and validated 2020 model, and then we include the 2050 socioeconomic data, basically the future population and employment. So the idea is, if you think about, demand and supply, we do have the current transportation network as a supply, and we have the future or the 2050 employment and population as a demand. So how can we satisfy that demand is basically the issue. So it is an input-output model. So this is the 2050, the do-nothing model volume. Do-nothing is basically if we don't do anything between now and 2050, if we don't do any kind of roadway improvement, what would be the future volume? Next slide, please. This is even more critical tool for the MTP update, in my opinion. If you remember the 2020 base year level of service, you have few red and a few reddish and yellow. Now, because of the increased population and employment in 2050, you will see a lot of roadways are congested, and they are in level of service, F, E and F. So this is basically, if we don't do anything at all between now and 2050, this is the kind of the capacity issue that we'll have in 2050. And then you will see the projects that are coded in the network, basically the three, the description and then the networks, the project types are linked included there. Next slide, please. This is just what we saw in the previous slide, kind of in a bar graph. So basically this shows, I think the one thing that the main takeaway here is if you don't do anything between now and 2050, right now in 2020, only 4% of the VMT, VMT is vehicle miles traveled, only 4% of the VMT experienced delay, which is a level of service F. If you don't do anything in 2050, that number will go to 40%. That's significant. And this is kind of, a mirror of what the daily level of service map between 2020 and 2050 comparison is. So that's the one thing that we have to, the takeaway from this graph is, if we don't do anything by 2050, the level of service F jumps from 4% to 40%. Next slide, please, Roberta. So what is it that the next step is, the MPO staff will provide project list for the remaining 2050 MTP scenarios. And then we, every time we do run travel demand model, we provide the system performance to help with the MTP development. And then we basically, whether it is in a map format, whether it's in different metrics, we'll be more than happy to provide the system performance for MTP development. So I believe that's the last slide I have, Waikoda. Yes. So I would like to take any questions you might have.
All right. Anyone have any questions? Anyone?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to thank GDOT for this presentation. This is an eye-opener as we see the value or the proposition of doing nothing. What if we do nothing? I would love the opportunity to share this farther and wider. Do you have just a little bit of background on your methodology, the metrics? Because I'm sure as we share this, we'll get many questions about how this is developed.
Absolutely. So we do have the somebody's calling me. Let me just silence it. So we do have a detailed documentation, a detailed methodology. In fact, when I presented the same, not the same slide, but the content at the TCC, I have a lot of detailed methodology, detailed metrics, how these models have been validated, calibrated, and then all the validation and calibration statistics. But, it took so much time and I was asked to trim it down. But I will be more than happy to provide any detailed information if one is really interested. And then we also have, while we're developing this model, we are also preparing a documentation of how this model was developed, what are the inputs, what are the outputs, the whole nine yards is really. And also we do have at the GDOT's external website, there is a socioeconomic data preparation guidance that we put out for MPOs to use. I would be happy to share all of that. But yes, I would be more than happy to discuss in a detailed manner.
Yeah, and also I want to mention the travel demand model, like a methodology and the socioeconomic data development methodology will be appendix to the 2050 MTP. So you will have a detailed documentation.
Excellent. And if it's not too much trouble to distribute that to the board members, this is a board that appreciates technical data. In addition, I would like to request any underlying data related to land use development assumptions, your inputs, and how the model is achieved, because I fully anticipate in sharing this that we're going to have some eyes popping out and heads and heads exploding. But I think this is something certainly that the public needs to see and understand. That if we choose to do nothing, how bad this is going to be well into our future. The forces that were cast into motion are beyond our control. It's incumbent upon us as decision makers to do the best that we can. And so if you could please distribute that to the board members, including any of the land use data that you have to develop that methodology. It would be extremely helpful in our decision-making and planning in the future.
Absolutely. So speaking a little bit about the land use data is supposed to be used while developing the socioeconomic data. So while GDOT is helping out for the actual technical work, which requires a lot of money, by the way, each of these model developments adopt about 14 MPO models in Georgia. They all cost $70,000 to $80,000 every time we develop this model, but we're just not charging all of the MPOs. We're just providing support to our planning partners, to MPOs. But we're asking MPOs to provide us the socioeconomic data, the underlying socioeconomic data. So what you say now, the land use data is supposed to be included in that socioeconomic data. It's zonal socioeconomic data. And so we don't develop that socioeconomic data. Wekoda can speak about that. But what we do is to kind of, you know, to try to get all the inputs correctly. Obviously, when Wekoda presented, we send us the socioeconomic data. We provided some comments. Those comments were addressed. And we felt comfortable about the underlying data. But there are so many underlying data that you can include, including the National Household Travel Survey, which did that purchase to help out models perform very well. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah, we did use the land use as part of the input for the socioeconomic data development. We do have a methodology. We will document that.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
All right, Mr. Ayala.
Yeah, I think we use something like this when we do a call for projects. This is really good information. Moving forward, when we do call for projects, I don't know how the weighting works, but my colleague to my left, this is great information for her to remove cars from our streets, but also where we need to improve, future capacity. So okay. When we go for a call for projects, I think this is a good thing to look at weighting wise when we score projects moving forward.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? Let me ask this. Here's what I see. We're going to, when we look at what's being studied in the cost of doing nothing and the cost of doing something, all right? I see that they have all the major thoroughfares in here, all right? Now, what's that going to do when all the new subdivisions that are being planned now and all of the new logistic houses that are being planned now, what is that going to do to the traffic model when, I'm going to just take one for instance, and I'm taking this one because it runs from the southern end of Chatham County all the way to the northern end, Little Neck Road, okay? If you look at, I guess my question would be, how do we get Little Neck Road to green, which is a C or better, when 9 new subdivisions going on and you're four-laning it and you got tractor trailers and you've got all the other things that combine? Somebody going to get mad because they're going to be stuck in their subdivision, can't get out to get to work or whatever. So my question to us is, is there a way for GDOT to come and share this with the Bloomingdale's, Pula, Port Wentworth, Garden City, Savannah? Because what I think, here's a two-tier thing, right? GDOT is interested in getting that freight and getting the highways, Ogeechee Road, Effingham Parkway, Pula Parkway, You see where I'm coming from? All right. They want to move that traffic there. Our responsibility is how we get those cars in and out those subdivisions. Whether we're talking about, when we look at our traffic engineers, whether they're talking about lighting or whether they're talking about right-hand turns only or left-hand turns only or whatever. All right. So I think we need to take this that we're showing today.
What we are showing today is the 2020 base year data and the 2015 do nothing data. And then staff will provide GDOT with projects in the TIP with right-of-way programmed and the projects in the TIP with preliminary engineering programmed, and then they will plug in. This is like a base year model and 2050 do nothing model, and then they will do the next one is existing plus committed. So you have construction funds already committed, and then you have right-of-way, that's the model network four, and then preliminary engineering, that's that model net five. And so by that step, you might see less red over here. And then if that model still shows the red, that's where we come up with the project recommendations. Quaker Road.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, well said, Waikoda. She said it the right way. If you go to the next slide, that clearly shows what Waikoda just talked about. So the next scenario is, Mr. Chairman, is we have different scenarios, you know, different networks, different scenarios. The next scenario is going to be existing plus committed. Existing plus committed means all of those projects that have construction dollar in the current state. When we add those projects, what you see here now, the red will kind of, you know, not necessarily go away, but you will see a change because there is some improvement, right? And then the fourth network, the 4 year in the steep end plus all of those projects that have right of way and preliminary engineering in the steep, when you add them, you will see some of these reds and the yellows kind of, you know, go away.
Yeah.
I cannot speak to that until I get the list. But showing those scenarios will kind of, you know, show, you know, what exactly the citizens in Charamand, this entire study area is experiencing in the future.
Yes.
Okay, now, he answered my question.
Yeah.
He can't do anything with it until he gets a list.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, we're working on the list. So
that list, that list include, now, here's my next question. Does that list include anything that does not have to go before the MPC to change zones?
Well, because most of the projects that included are revolved around the project already in the TIP. So we can check the TIP to see which ones have the construction programmed, which ones have right-of-way programmed, which ones has the preliminary engineering. I can actually probably just show you something.
And while Wakoda is looking that up, I think just to get really to the heart of your question with regards to development and growth, some of that, you know, we still are dealing with this at a macro level. A lot of this is incumbent upon each one of the jurisdictions to look at what their requirements are for the subdivisions with regards to more requirements, whether it's road improvement, making sure that they're looking at it for their capital improvement elements, because we look at that as well. But in order to address some of the rapid growth that you're seeing in some of the jurisdictions that kind of expand out to the unincorporated areas, it's going to take them also looking at what their development standards are and upping those as well in order to address some of the concerns and things that we see in the local community.
So if you don't get it in the MPO, you get it in MPC?
If we don't get it at the MPO, we get it either MPC or just not MPC or the local jurisdictions, Pooler, Bloomingdale, Savannah, from the standpoint of dealing with their subdivision piece, we get it, you know, at that point. But it has to be something that is part of the localized plan. And I'll give you a quick example. Like for Savannah, we did their comp plan. We basically have an area where we talk more specifically about transportation. We did that at a certain level, but, you know, we will continue to have more discussions with Savannah about taking it either further down in the this past update that we did for the comprehensive plan. And we did Pooler's comprehensive plan as well. I basically pushed for a nodal development policy. That's why you've got these now nodes in which you can look at where growth is happening. That has nothing from the standpoint to do with whether this is at a large level. This is Pooler, you're wanting to grow here. Savannah, you're wanting to grow here based on the information that we have. This is what we know that you got for infrastructure, capital funds, et cetera. It is up to them, and I know the city has been working on this. I'm sure Pooler is looking at it as well as other jurisdictions to kind of look at their internal policies for their capital budgets and, you know, engineering and other stuff to move forward to see, do they need to strengthen up their development standards? MPC doesn't just automatically do that. We do that in partnership with them, but that's how that technically is supposed to work.
Yeah, and regarding the model, I do have two comments. One comment is like we developed this like first network, second network based on the project development status, and this is vested by the TCC. So it doesn't have to come to the MPO board, but it's vested by the TCC. But we do account for some additional projects. So you have some additional projects like County's Quaco Road widening project. We add that in and submit it to GDOT. So that will be accounted for in the later networks for the travel demand model. The second point I want to make is this travel demand model only covers the collectors and above. It doesn't involve local roads.
Right.
So if you're a local subdivision, that's more involved local roads, and that cannot be accounted for in the travel demand model unless it is like based on population or development. That's accounted for in the social economic data development, but it's not showing in the network.
But watch me now. Watch me and understand where I'm going, okay? If I'm dealing with a subdivision that's local roads and I have created five or six different streets in that subdivision, right?
That's local roads.
All right, that's local roads.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for them to get out of that local road, I'm going to what? I'm going to have to go to one of the roads that we are improving now, right?
Yeah, collector
okay,
and the person, yeah, arterial.
All of them
yeah.
offer something.
Yeah.
All right. Nothing is isolated. All of them offer something. So if we're talking about putting, and it's just hypothetical now, if we're talking about putting 900 houses off of Highway 80, all right, in a subdivision, all right, 900 houses gonna have cars.
Yeah.
Those cars will have to get to Highway 80 to get any place they want to do in town, right?
Yeah.
So what I want to make sure is that as we plan to move this traffic, see, we're not just talking about moving the traffic on the thoroughfares, but we're also talking about how we get people in and out of their house, in and out of their subdivision. Mm-hmm. All right. That's where I'm going. Yes, ma'am.
First, you don't have the committeds done yet, correct?
Yeah, it's not
right.
done yet.
Okay.
So,
can what if scenarios be run?
What?
According to what the fellow from GDOT said, they're going to need the information. If they don't get the information, then they can't input it, right? The same thing I'm saying is about, like, for instance, if I'm going to use the city of Savannah, all right? If they in their expansion, if they give permits to build a new subdivision that's got five different sets, subdivisions in one, all right, and they're gonna move, I'm gonna just use Bay Street, all right. All that traffic coming out, that subdivision gotta come in Bay Street. If they don't give you the information, if they don't give it to GDOT, then it's not calculated.
Yeah, that's right. So if we
all
know
right.
the subdivision
if
and
you
we
know,
yeah, and then we know like how much population will be added in, how much households,
mm-hmm.
and then they in the travel demand model, they have like trip generation,
right.
person production. So they estimated the amount of traffic that will be generated impacting like this collector road or principal. But if we don't have that information, yeah, the
right.
model.
And that's my point for
mm-hmm.
making
yes.
this. Make sure that we can provide MPO, MPC, GDOT with the information.
Understood.
Because without the information, they can't come up with a solution.
Yeah, that's right.
The other thing about the subdivisions, though, is the more connections you make between the subdivision and adjacent roads, collectors, other local roads, the more connections you make, the less the traffic is impacted. The less that subdivision is impacted. So that's something that we need to be aware of as planners and officials moving forward when we approve subdivisions. If you can make that connection to another road, that improves the traffic situation. They have another way to get out. I live in midtown Savannah, and I have 100 different ways to go. But somebody up in one of the subdivisions that has only one main road in and out, or two connections in and out, that's the only way they can go. So in the what-if scenarios, are we able to look at one road and go, okay, this impact doesn't impact us very much. Let's make the improvement over here instead. Do we look at all of the road systems?
I think the travel demand model is like more general. It's region-wide. So you're talking about specific location. Normally, that's coming up with like a traffic impact analysis. That's like localized, mm-hmm. More specific. This is region-wide. This is region-wide model.
Exactly. So for things like that, Mr. Chairman, the regional travel demand model that we developed can be used to do specific sub-area analysis, specific corridor analysis, and things like that. But this, in a way, Koda is absolutely right. The model is kind of, you know, regional in nature. It does not necessarily tell you. It shows you the capacity issue. It shows you the problem, but it does not necessarily address this very localized issue, the localized one.
Understood.
But our model can be used for that.
Tell Sally, I got it. I'm coming. I got you. I saw you. But I need to get the board members first. All right, Mr. Manager.
Since we were using Savannah as an example, I just wanted to make it clear that MPC just like handles all of our rezoning and site plan reviews for new subdivisions as well. So that data should be included.
Right. But
here.
See, understand what I just said, though. I know it will go to MPC if you're talking about zoning.
Yes, sir.
All right. But there are places where the zoning don't need to be changed, but you can put the subdivision in there.
Not necessarily. Well, you're absolutely right, but for
you permit
for the,
them
for the for, and they, and we should be monitoring them. Our permitting.
Yeah.
But for the vast majority of new subdivisions, those are going to be required.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to make sure that, I've heard it said twice from Wakoda and I've heard it said from GDOT. If we have the information to input, then we can answer the question better. That's what I'm getting to.
Yeah, the model is as good as the information. Yes.
Yeah. Knowledge is power. Information is knowledge. Yes, ma'am.
Chairman, I think it's also very important. I would be very remiss if I didn't point out that all of this work also needs to fully consider. You have a brand new master transit plan with a very detailed analysis, modeling, and forecasting in it of how we can help address the demand and take burden off of the community and off of our existing facilities. And so this travel demand forecasting work needs to also consider the work that's in the master transit plan and a multimodal solution to the improvements that are going to be brought forward to meet our future.
One thing, too, if I may, just to be real clear, one of the things that we've done, I know since I've been here, is – I've made sure that CAT has somebody on the review panel so that they can give that type of input. We have a lot of discussions with regards to anything that has to come forward for site plan review. In addition to that, we have pushed to get additional data when there is a subdivision before it's approved so that we can look at those connections. We look at it not only for road connections, but we look at it for opportunity to see, is there ability to do a greenway trail or some type of connection that takes people from one point to the next? We're still getting information. I'm hoping that we can continue to get more detailed information from Pooler and from some of the other jurisdictions, but we try to get as much information as we can so that we can factor that in, especially working with Savannah's site plan review in those areas where they connect up to a Pooler. It would just be good if we could get the information from Pooler, for example, before those are approved so that we could at least give some comment or feedback to say, can you get that developer at least to build to, you know, this standard or to create a, you know, a connection, even if it's a stopping point, so that you've got different vehicles or different ways to connect. But we hear you. We understand. We do look at a lot of that stuff, and we will continue to try to get as much information as we can to make sure that those are factored into the models that we have.
All right, let me get the young lady in the audience. If you come up to the mic and identify yourself and you want to input on something we talked about, something we're saying.
Thank you.
Pull the mic up.
Thank you. My name is Ashley Goodrich, and I had a question for Citizens Comment. The do nothing that was presented today, that is just all of the current and previous TIP projects that are all been under construction over the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So none of the current TIP or next future short-term fiscal year projects, are they not listed? Because in the, at least in what's on the screen right now, there's nothing that shows anything about the Talmadge Bridge crossing or the I-95 projects as they go north. And the reason why I'm asking that is because in our boundary for where this model is being conducted, in every direction but north, we know that while we do have expansion of territory, your June boundary was just changed this morning. So where are we looking at in those population demand models where things are coming from outside of the boundary?
See, that's the kind of question I want. Wakota, where'd she go? Oh, she just went, okay. See, that's the kind of question that I'm getting to. See, because information is knowledge and knowledge is power. So when we look at this going forward, here's where we are and we're going forward, right? So how do we include those things in the TIP and the rest of them to go into the do nothing model?
Oh, okay.
And she mentioned the bridge and some other projects, and then we changed the boundaries and stuff.
Okay. Travel, for one thing, travel demand model, as you can see, Hapti did the presentation. It's a three county model.
Okay.
So it's regardless of the MPO boundary. So it's a three county model.
Right.
So you see all the roadways. And also the model has its limitations. Like Talmadge Bridge that we talked about over there, that's a maintenance project. And this model only account for capacity projects, capacity building projects like widening or new roadways. So it doesn't account for like intersection improvements or, like maintenance project. You're repaving. No, it doesn't account for that. Right. It's only capacity.
So that has to come from the jurisdiction themselves to you all, right? Let me give you the scenario that pops in my mind that she was asking her question. Let's use the Talmadge Bridge, right? When they start work on the Talmadge Bridge, where is it going to dump? The traffic is going to dump on Overthaw, right? Which will get you West Boundary. West Boundary going to connect you to 16. It's going to connect you to Gwinnett Street. It's going to connect you to Louisville Road. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's
now how you've got also when you get to Louisville Road, now you've got traffic coming out of Georgia Ports. So if that information is not in here, if it's not given to you all.
That information is already coded in the model because if you just make like raise the cables, it doesn't increase capacity of the roadway. It's still two lane on each side.
Okay.
So it's already coded in the model.
All right. So then we go back to Alderman Palumbo. Give us more facts so we can better plan if we get more facts.
Yeah.
That's where we are. All right.
Okay.
Any other questions? Everybody satisfied?
Yeah. GDOT basically wants us to approve the base year model and the 2050 do nothing model before they can move on to the the third network, fourth network, fifth network.
Please,
Mr. Chairman,
to give me a motion.
Yes, I would move for the approval of the base model and the do-nothing model.
Second. Probably motion and second that we approve the model. Are you ready for the question? Please cast your vote starting to my right.
Yes, Aiello.
DeMassimo, yes.
Melder, yes.
Palumbo, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Williams, yes.
Chairman, yes. All right. Anything else we need from there? All right, let's move right along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. So before we move on to the status report, I just want to mention that we are going to coordinate with GDOT for the roadway functional classification. So you have the roadways that need to be up classified, for example, Benton Boulevard. So we are going to coordinate with you through the TCC, Technical Coordinating Committee, to submit the information to GDOT. So if you have something, just let us know.
Okay.
For the 2050 MTP update, we already adopted the boundary this morning, so we are going to forward the boundary to GDOT so they can provide us the revenue projections and travel demand model, as Hapti just demonstrated that travel demand model and the non-motorized transportation plan. Asia is going to give a presentation. Congestion management process. We had the first preliminary draft attached to the agenda, and I just received the second draft this morning from Genesis, who's developing the CMP update. And this will also be a source for our project selection for the 25th MTP. Resiliency planning. Anna of our staff is doing the resiliency planning, and we had several meetings for the vulnerability assessment. So she's working on the chapters. So basically, that's what we are doing, and we are also, as soon as we have some time, and we'll just put in information into the report, so we don't have to wait until the last minute. Okay. And so we're still targeting for August 7th, 2024, to make sure the funding comes to our area.
All right.
And then the next one, CMP, I have already, I still have the preliminary draft attached to this one, but I just told you that we just got the second draft this morning, so we will just post that probably after review, and then we will just send information to you. But this one already include a lot of the new data and new information identify where the congestion areas are.
Okay.
And then let me do the MOU and the bylaws update before Asia gives the presentation on the non-motorized transportation plan. Since we adopted the new boundary, so we have to update the MOUs and the bylaws. So in the MOUs, so we, exhibit A is the boundary. So as you can see, the exhibit A will be reflect the new boundary. And then, for the description about the boundary in Bryan County, it has changed to the portion of Bryan County outside of Fort Stewart, and it will change the language to be more accurate. To see include Richmond Hill, the portions of a 2020 census defined Savannah urban area that fall within unincorporated Bryan County and the areas that are connecting Richmond Hill and the Savannah urban area in Bryan County. And then Effingham County sent us a correction about the language in the MOU regarding the portion in the boundary in Effingham County. So if you go along, we used to have the portion of Effingham County south of State Route 119. We noticed State Route 119 actually includes more area than what our boundary includes. So we actually use a straight line that is State Route 119 / Indigo Road / Bassney Road. And we put this language to Effingham County, thank them for their correction. And they said this language is more accurate. So we corrected that. And then also, since Northern Bryan County includes Pembroke, so Pembroke used to be a signature signer for the MOU. Now, anything in reference to Pembroke has been deleted. And also, for the membership dues, previously, Effingham County, we were trying to get input from all our members, and Effingham County's portion in membership dues to be determined. And since then, Effingham County sent us information that they will pay for all of their members. So Rincon, part of Springfield and Guyton. So they will pay all of their members. And Bryan County, now Bryan County, Richmond Hill, definitely we have to split the membership dues in Bryan County with Bryan County. So Richmond Hill is not going to cover their membership dues. They will split the county's share based on population. And for Chatham County, we did a polling. And because chairman says if we have the election, Chatham County is not going to pay the 25% of the municipality's dues. So we did a polling, actually. We didn't receive information from all of the members, but so far it's like election votes way more than non-election, no election. So we would decide to have election. That means Chatham County will not pay the 25% of the municipality's share, but we will have election on the Corn Bureau board. So that's another change in the MOU. And we will send you the MOU document and after we talked about this. And also I have to recalculate the membership dues after today's meeting. Another thing that is related to the membership dues is CAT doesn't have the same financial capability of the like GPA and Georgia Ports Authority. So we changed the language to CAT will be based on 60th percentile, and then Savannah Airport and the GDOT will be based on 70th percentile. And Exhibit B also have, we update the boundary and the population as well. For the bylaws, we were adding election, and also another comment I received is that when we have election, only the elected officials can be candidates for the chairman and the vice chair. So I will put that in the bylaws. And so we hope to have the MOU adopted in April. And then the bylaws adopted in June. So we will still work on the bylaws. But after this meeting, we're going to send everybody the boundary and also the calculated fees and then draft MOU for you with the updates. And then you start to review that. And then back in April, and we will hope to adopt, MPO will adopt the MOU, and then we will send them to all the jurisdictions for the signatures. So that's the update for this. Any questions?
Questions? All right. Go right ahead.
Okay. Isha will give you the update on the non-motorized transportation plan.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'll be extremely brief with this. So staff is continuing to work on the non-motorized transportation plan, and this plan is a document that addresses the development of bike and pedestrian infrastructure within the core MPO planning area. The goal of the non-motorized transportation plan update is to identify new projects, assess the needs of the community, and set new goals for bike and pedestrian infrastructure. In terms of what we're currently doing with this plan, we are mapping out the projects for documentation purposes. So when we identify a proposed project that we would like to include into the non-motorized transportation plan update, I'm just immediately putting it on the map just so we can have it documented. In addition to that, a lot of the main work we're doing is updating the scoring methodology and scoring criteria. So we've had meetings with the non-motorized transportation plan steering committee multiple times, so a couple of times in January and then again in this month. And so we determined that we will be updating the scoring methodology. And since we are updating the scoring methodology, that means we have to rescore the older projects in the 2014 plan. And so that will include scoring almost 500 projects. And so within that meeting, we determined that it was probably best to use GIS within that process. So currently we're in the process of identifying GIS layers that would be a good candidate for a scoring criteria so that we can determine which bike lanes and crosswalks and sidewalk projects get ranked higher than other bike lane, crosswalk, and sidewalk projects. In terms of what we are considering within a scoring criteria, in terms of the topics that we'd like to include, we're including discussions on equity, safety, efficiency, and then also being mindful of a lot of the development that's happening within the core MPO area. That is all in terms of this status report. So if you have any questions, just please let me know.
Questions? Thank you, ma'am. All right, let's go on to information.
Mr. Chairman, we do have information on the greenhouse gas emission program. Are you interested in learning that today, or do you want to just defer to a later meeting?
Did you have it in this agenda?
It's included under 2050 MTP.
Okay.
I forgot to ask Anna to give the presentation on this. It will be short.
Hi, good afternoon, Anna McQuarrie, staff. Hi, I have a lot of information here in this presentation about the resilience chapter, which I encourage you to look at more in detail at a later date. But I did want to just let you all know about something kind of coming down the pipe here. Federal Highway Administration's greenhouse gas performance measure final rule. So this was published in December of 2023. It was effective January of 2024. And so what this does here requires state departments of transportation and metropolitan planning organizations to establish declining carbon dioxide targets for the greenhouse gas measure and report on progress towards the achievement of those targets. So this is something that we will be required to do. State DOT's submission was originally due on February 1st. However, the deadline for enforcement of that is now March 29th. And then MPOs must submit their report 180 days after their state DOT does. So after GDOT submits their report, we will have 180 days. And this is due to challenges in federal court. In this presentation, there are many hyperlinks if you'd like to click on them and read more. This is from a GDOT presentation here, just so you have an idea. Okay, what does that mean, greenhouse gas measure? They're going to be looking at vehicle miles traveled, mode share, fleet composition, fuel efficiency. And then what are the MPO requirements? We have to establish a declining four-year target. Our targets are due 180 days after GDOT, and that last bullet point does not apply to us. This was the original schedule, so this has changed now that the date of enforcement has changed. We're still waiting on GDOT's targets to come out. However, this can just give you a little bit of a timeline idea of what does this rule mean for us? What will we have to do in the future? And so more to come. However, just wanted to let you all be aware that this is happening and this will be a requirement for us. Thank you.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you so much. As you know, this is an issue near and dear to us. And as federal funds come down the pipeline, just as a primer for the members so that we can access these, will it be a gateway to be able to be eligible for grant funding? And do you see any possibilities coming up in the near future that we can tap into?
Yeah, great question. So resiliency planning is really important. We're required to do it. A lot of the bipartisan infrastructure law grant programs that have been established require resiliency planning. And actually, you do get a reduction in cost share if you have a resiliency improvement plan, and those can include greenhouse gas declining targets, a lot of different things. And so this presentation does include information on a vulnerability assessment that we're working on right now. And so hopefully that those can be used as well to attract, be more attractive in grant programs. This also is in combination with our urban flood model. So having programs like this really does make us an attractive candidate for grant programs by the bipartisan infrastructure law and other DOT FHWA programs.
And is there anything that cities can do to assist to provide any information or details moving forward to help move it along?
Yes. So we, for our vulnerability assessment, I have a team of, in this slideshow, we have a team, from recommendations through different core MPO committees of representatives. So we're working with GDOT, working with our representatives as well here. For the greenhouse gas target, we're waiting right now to have GDOT's report, and then we'll move forward and be able to contact people with what we may need.
Dr. I want to recommend. I couldn't see any cities.
Joe Shearhoff.
Yeah, we have to share.
Mr. Chair.
Sure. Question.
Is this in place of or affiliated with the CMAQ program, Congestion Management Air Quality?
If I may answer that question, it is related but not entirely the same. It's different. It's a different part of money. The Resiliency Improvement Plan came out of the IIJA, as opposed to CMAQ has been for, you know, more than three decades. It's a mature program. So they're related, but they're different.
All right. Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you all.
All right. Moving on. GDOT.
Is Katie online? I will bring up
GDOT. Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
For pre-construction projects, we have 19-219 State Route 404 Spur Talmadge Memorial Bridge. The pre-construction services began this quarter in collaboration between the general contractor will occur throughout the year as GDOT prepares for construction to begin quarter 1/25/15/15 when the safety improvements on State Route 204 from State Route 21 to Rio Road. The PFPR is anticipated in September. Line 3/15/675 safety improvements on I-16 at Chatham Parkway remains on schedule for January 25 let. Line 4 and 5 are the twin projects, the bridge replacement over Back River and the widening on State Route 404. The preliminary design is ongoing and working toward PFPR. 6 and 7, 17-414 and 415, this is the bridge replacements over Bull River and Lazaretto. We're still waiting on environmental tech studies and working on the draft environmental document anticipated in September. 18023 is the roundabout at Hodgefield Road and State Route 30. Continues in preliminary design of PCRF will be submitted in January 24, proposing that the right-of-way authorization is in September of 26 and let in December of 27. For construction reports that they're progressing, I don't have anything outstanding on those. I did want to go back and there was a question about 17183 earlier about the bridge over Savannah River and the public outreach. And I just want to say that the department's now gathering the PIOH package materials and they've anticipated dates for a public information open house to be held sometime in May. So this will be an in-person meeting and they'll also have a virtual open house for comments. But I just want to let you know you could expect that out sometime in May.
Yeah, when you have that information, please forward it to us and we will forward to all the board members and also share on the MPO website and social media.
Yes, ma'am.
Katie, I do have a, actually I received one question this morning about the Ogeechee Road widening.
Okay.
The comment is during the construction, are you going to close the roadways or are you going to have like detours? I mean, how do you handle that?
I don't have any comments on that one. Let me look that up and I'll get it to you.
Okay, thank you.
Detour.
Where on Ogeechee Road are you talking about?
Ogeechee Road widening that is going on.
I know.
Right now.
Where? See, because you're talking about at Stiles Avenue and Ogeechee Road and talking at 516.
The Ogeechee Road widening goes from I-516 all the way to Victory Drive.
Right.
Yeah, the question that I received this morning is about that bridge. Are you going to close that bridge during construction?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Then you, if they close that bridge, you're really going to have a
detour.
Yeah. Where they're going to run them around through Savannah, through Hodgson Street and over to 52nd and then back around?
Yeah, right. Kitty said she's going to check.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you, Katie.
All right. Chatham County.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Chatham County, just going through some of our federally funded projects. The I-16 at Jimmy Dulwich Parkway, we are currently undertaking value engineering study on that project. Chevis Road improvements, we are working towards our public information open house that we are anticipating sometime in May. Girard Avenue, we're currently getting ready for our preliminary field plan review. That's going to be next week to move forward into final design on that project. Green Island Road Path, we are currently in developing our conceptual report. And then the study, State Route 25, State Route 204, and President Street at Truman, we are still in our information gathering process for those studies. And then there's also some information on our local projects in this report as well. Do you guys have any questions?
Questions? No, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to City of Savannah.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and board members. Joseph Sherhouse with the City of Savannah. Some brief updates. The Project Duren, City of Savannah had a great meeting with Georgia Department of Transportation leadership team on January 31st, talking about some operational and safety enhancements we can make along the Duren corridor in the short term. And we continue to work towards the long-term solution of increasing capacity along this corridor through our work with FHWA. The DeLesseps Avenue project continues to progress between Waters Avenue and Truman Parkway. The underground utility work is moving as scheduled, and detours continue to be placed along the corridor. As was discussed in the meeting previously with the amendment to the TIP, Truman Trail Phase 2B has been awarded. We are working through that contract award now and estimate construction to begin within March or April, the second quarter of 2024. Company that we're working with is JCH, who has a long history of working on the Atlanta Beltline in Atlanta. It's done several miles of trail development, so we're excited about the ability to work with them. Middle Ground Road, tied to town segment, we look to award that contract within the next 30 days. In the I-16 ramp removal project, GDOT is working towards that procurement opportunity. I would like to take a moment to mention we had a vehicular incident this morning at 3 a.m. off of the I-16 ramp onto MLK. I just wanted to highlight for the core MPO board that the 2015 IMR study highlighted the safety risk of interstate traffic dumping off this particular ramp into our urban grid network, and I think we saw a real-life example of that this morning with that truck accident that we had on MLK. So with that, I'll open it up for any questions.
Questions? Comments?
Mr. Chairman, just one quick comment and a status update. Thank you, Mr. Sherhouse. We also did bring on board a full-time Tied to Town coordinator, recognizing that there are more available funds, especially from the MPO available out there. We are examining connections from Lake Mayer South to Georgia Southern University, and also willing to provide technical assistance to neighboring municipalities as well. So we recognize that this is a very special condition that we have that we can fund this position, but we're all going to do better when we all do better, and certainly the needs for mobility do not end at the City of Savannah's boundaries. So if you need any assistance, please reach out to me. I'm happy to connect to help harness some of these funds. Thank you.
Y'all put up a wall or put up some kind of noise barrier along that Truman Parkway going that way. That's y'all, you know what I'm talking about. Joey, in case you don't know, Nick knows what I'm talking about. Y'all stop them folks from beating up on me.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
May I make a comment?
Yes.
Mr. Palumbo's comment, Pooler just had a meeting last week with Tied to Town. So we are on board. So we will get together with you on that.
All right. We don't have anything from Hilton Head in that airport. Ayala's gone. Anybody online? None. Let's move on. Chair Mary Transit.
Good afternoon, Chairman, board, and people watching at home. Mary Moskowitz, Chatham Area Transit. I know I'll be brief because I'm in between you all and lunch here, but the first update I want to give you on is our IPS system. We are trying to put those systems in all of our vessels. We have one remaining vessel, the Fluence Modus. She is currently in the shop for some other reasons, but as soon as she gets out, we can start working on some of the installing that device on that vessel. With the ferry boat maintenance facility and ferry dock, this is one grant with two separate projects on it. I'm happy to announce for the ferry maintenance facility that the final engineering is complete, and we have actually been submitting permits for that work. The ferry dock, this is for the new dock at Plant Riverside, and we anticipate issuing that award. So the bid has gone out. We have received the final bids and plan on issuing that award soon, probably later in the spring. With our ferry replacement program, these are for those electric hybrid ferries. We've successfully completed two of those programs. Now, this is for the third ferry. The invitation to bid went out last month, and you know, we hope to have that back soon to be able to award that. With our bus replacement, this is the 5339 plan. We do have a grant in place now. They just announced for the FY24 funding for that. So staff is looking at that and seeing if we want to move forward with some additional, that is a competitive grant to be able to apply for some additional buses as well. Still working with Georgia Power on the installation of the charging stations at Cat Central and on our restoration plan as well. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Cat? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Well, let's move right along.
Yep. I don't think Stephanie's online, but she did provide the report for the South Carolina projects. It's attached to the agenda. The TIP funding tracking, Sally has been coordinating with the project sponsors, and she has been constantly updating this table with the progress.
One day y'all gonna make that big enough for me to read.
Yeah.
I can't even read that with the glasses on. You know I'm in trouble. I'm not by myself. Thank you. I'm glad.
Yeah, you have to.
Ooh, Lordy.
Zooming a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know it's a lot, but you have to put it in multiple pages, but it needs to be big enough for me to read. Good Lord. I broke my eyes last night trying to read that. All right, let's move right along. We don't have any public comments, do we?
Oh, the grant opportunities, it just as soon as the staff is aware of the funding opportunities, we just send them to our member agencies. Like I mentioned at the beginning, City of Savannah is applying for some assets for a grant, but there are also some like race grant and large bridge improvement program and a bridge improvement grant opportunities. So these are opportunities, and if you're interested, take a look at it. But I think many of these are available to smaller municipalities. Yeah, but some of these are probably related to GDOT, yeah, DOT, yeah. Like race grant. It's pretty big because there's a lot of money and it needs a lot of analysis.
All right. The next core MPO meeting will be April the 24th at 10 a.m. here in this building. Anything else we need to bring before us? Give me a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Yes, Jared.
Probably motion and second that we adjourn. Are you ready for the question? Please vote.
Williams, yes.
Hutcherson, yes.
Hicks, yes.
Jarrett, yes.
Chairman, yes.